You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 181 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, and joining me today, a legendary member of the podcast, a regular visitor, good friend. His name is Robbie Callen. What's up, man?
Hey, what's happening? It's playoff time.
I was about to say, it's playoff time. That was almost a full-on jinx between the two of us. I'm excited about the playoffs, just in general, honestly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it should be good. Some good matchups in the first round, which isn't always the case. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully the Hawks can keep playing well, at least like make it interesting in the first round. This team's so weird. It's just so weird.
Yes, that is accurate. Since the last time I recorded, the odds came out, and I have to ask you about this because this is what we do.
Oh, talk to me.
The Wizards are -210 favorites, so they're about a 68-69%. Favorite in the series, according to Las Vegas, which seems close to right, I guess, for me.
Yeah.
I mean, not surprised that Washington's favorite. Obviously, that was probably always going to happen, but I'm wondering if that, does it seem high or low to you? Does that seem about right?
Seems about right. I mean, I think people will see maybe 4-5 matchup and think that's high. But I think there's a pretty clean break in the East between the top four teams and the bottom four teams. I think that's been the case all year. And yeah, I mean, it seems about right. And this season, Hawks are what, 1-3 against Washington? Like, it's not like they have like this track record of beating them or anything. And
by the way, the one victory was on opening night. So it's been a long time since that game happened.
It's been a minute. Yeah. No, it's been, you know, Washington's been good. I think people underestimate how good of a coach Scott Brooks is. I think that was the case for the last couple years of his Oklahoma City tenure. It was fun to kind of make fun of the in-game coaching and the X's and O's and be like, look, he's terrible at ATOs or whatever, but the dude can coach, and he gets a lot out of his players. So it's been impressive to see what Washington, I mean, when we did our preseason preview podcast, I was terrified of saying anything about Washington because like we knew the talent they had, but they just had never shown it. And I wasn't sure how much of that was Randy Whitman. Wasn't sure how much of that was, they just have guys that are mercurial and are all over the place. But this year they've been really good. And, I think that series price is about right. But you know, the way the Hawks have been playing lately, if they keep playing the way they did in their little stretch where they beat the Cavs and the Celtics and then the Cavs again, you know, obviously anything happened, but I don't see how you know, the old line, never trust the Hawks. I don't know how you see this team and say, yeah, they can do that for 6 games, you know?
Yeah, I firmly agree.
5 games. It's just, you've watched more of this team than any human being. So I don't know. Like it's hard for me to go, yeah, that's what this team is now. But like it's encouraging, but also I'm not ready to jump in. You know, I'm not ready to be like, yeah, this team is, they found it. They got the click. You know, like we'll see.
Yeah, it's important to note that like the Hawks have had good stretches this year. Obviously, they started out really hot. The 9-2 start is the famous part. But even within the season, they've had a couple of these like 8-10 game stretches where they play really well. And at the end of the year, they are playing much better. I will say that it was a very strange circumstances at the end of the year. I think obviously, I think personally for me, the best win of all the ones at the end of the year was the Boston win. And that's that's a weird statement to make considering they beat Cleveland twice. But the first Cleveland game was just an aberration with, you know, the bench kind of going crazy. And that's not a sustainable model. And the second Cleveland game, you're down 26 after 3 quarters. And honestly, they were awful. I mean, the Cavs were great in the first 3 quarters, but the Hawks were really bad. They played absolutely incredible for 1 quarter. And Cleveland just kind of threw up on themselves. for me, like this, the actual, if you want some positivity, I would look at that Boston game and the Hawks just flat out playing well for four quarters. But it's interesting to me. I'm in the same camp as you. I don't trust this team to be able to put that together over as many games as you would need to, because you can't just say four games, because I think if Atlanta plays well and Washington plays well, Washington's going to win. So you're going to need to play well and have Washington play somewhere below their A game to win, at least on the road for sure. Maybe at home, if the Hawks played their best game and Washington played really well, maybe Atlanta can steal a game at home. But it's not been a great home team this year. That's the other part about this, is you don't have home court, which is not the biggest deal in the world, because you're pretty decent on the road this year compared to expectations. But at home, you're not a slam dunk to hold serve either. So it's definitely interesting to talk about in terms of matchup stuff as well. And, you know, Washington, since the, you know, Washington started 2-8, and then including that season opening loss to the Hawks. And since then, they've been really good. Although they quietly did not play quite as well down the stretch, which is, right, if you're looking for positivity from as a Hawks fan, that's probably where you want to start, is that Washington just hasn't played defense for a month. I'm not sure that's going to continue in the playoffs, because most teams suddenly try harder defensively, but that's a point of contention, because, you know, the Hawks offense is not good, but maybe Washington's just not going to be able to execute defensively.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you're hoping for. I mean, we've known this Hawks offense is going to be the weak point all season. It was just a matter of whether they could play really good defense all year. And I think that's what you saw with the kind of choppy stretches, is it's really hard to keep up that, like, be a defensive first team and win a lot, because it's hard to keep that intensity up for 82 games. On that end of the floor, I mean, you rarely see it from any team. And so you have these lulls and stretches where, you know, I mean, if the offense can't score more than 92 to 95 points in a game, like, you're just not going to win. And I don't know, like, if you're looking for positivity, it's that Washington's defense has been bad, and maybe, you know, Millsap can kind of cook, and you start getting, you keep seeing good play out of Tim Hardaway Jr. And he's had some of those games where you go, what? And you know, maybe he can cook Bradley Beal a little bit, because Beal has his moments where he just kind of just lapses on that end of the floor. The thing for me that I'll be looking for is just, how will Dennis handle John Wall? Because when John Wall cares about defense, he's a monster. He's so big, and, like, people don't realize how long John Wall is and just kind of how big he is as a point guard. Everybody gets caught up with the speed and these sort of things, but he's a big guy. And he's bigger than Dennis. He's about as long as Dennis, and he's a little more physical. So if Dennis can handle that, That to me is the key to this series, is how he handles that matchup with John Wall. I don't expect Dennis Schroeder to beat John Wall one-on-one in this matchup, but he cannot lose it tremendously. He cannot be outplayed consistently by John Wall. Because if that happens, the Wizards are just going to coast. Like, I mean, like, if John Wall is just winning that battle consistently every game, then they're going to win. If Dennis is turning it over, which is what John Wall does best, is force opposing point guards to turn it over. If Dennis is turning it over, if he's taking bad shots, if he tries to get caught up in a one-on-one game with one of the best point guards in the league, top five guy this year, I mean, the way he played, then it's not gonna go well. So I that's what I'm most interested to see, is how Dennis handles himself, because he has a tendency, he will play at a great level against great players at times. Like, he will step his game up and play great, but there are other times where he gets into dribble mode and trying to do it himself, and that's not what you need against this Wizards team. You don't need your point guard trying to take John Wall on.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the matchup, so I'm glad we got there. But it's interesting to me what the Hawks do defensively, if they just kind of let Dennis have that assignment. Or if they go try to get creative, especially if you see Thomas Efolosha playing and you might want to put him on John Wall or even Kent Bazemore. But with the way the Hawks are looking about lineups right now, I think Kale Chenard reported yesterday that Mike Budenholzer said on radio that Torian Prince is probably going to start the opener, which is surprising to me in some ways, although Torian did start and play well on the stretch. But in the end, going back to Schroeder, there's no place to really hide him defensively. So it's not as, you can't really take him off of Wall necessarily unless you want to have him chase Bradley Beal around screens, which is probably even a worse setup,
right,
given Dennis's strengths, because I think he'll be more engaged on the ball than anything else. But I don't know. It's going back real quick before we move on to keep going on the matchups. I do want to say that since the All-Star break, which is an arbitrary endpoint, Washington's defense is a bottom five unit in the league, but the Hawks have the worst offense in the league since the All-Star break on a per possession basis. So just worth noting in retrospect. But anyway, we can get back into Wall. But I do think Dennis is the key. I mean, obviously Paul Millsap's the best player on the team by a wide margin, but Dennis Schroeder, I think, is the engine here. If the Hawks were to compete in this series and like really, really threaten to win it, it'll be largely, in my opinion, because Dennis plays really well. It's pretty safe to assume that he's not going to play really well for seven games, because that's just not Dennis's MO. He's going to have a bad game or two in this series. But if he has enough good games and the Hawks win them, that seems pretty arbitrary and elementary. But I think it's pretty clear that when the Hawks play well, he usually plays well.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to need playoff Teague to be, you know, to kind of come out in Dennis. Like, I mean, that's it. We always kind of had that joke, like, when Teague played well, that's what drove the Hawks to win. It wasn't necessarily when, you know, you knew what you were getting out of Al Horford. You knew what you were getting out of Millsap last year. You knew kind of like these things. It was just like, are we going to get playoff Teague? Are we going to, you know, will the point guard be the driving force? And when Teague was good, the Hawks tended, you know, to move forward in the playoffs. When Teague was bad, or even going back to Bibby.
Bibby.
It's long been the point guard experience for the Hawks. It's long been, you know, like, you know, back then it was, you know, Joe can carry you maybe to a second round, maybe, but they needed somebody else to do something in the backcourt. You know, the Hawks have needed backcourt production away from, you know, a wing player or a stretch big, and they just need somebody that can be on the ball and get them into the offense and get them working, because as everybody notes in the playoffs, the possessions shrink and each possession is more important. So if each possession is more important, you need somebody to get you in the offense consistently and get you looking at good looks and getting those guys in the best positions. And we're going to have to see if Dennis can work the pick and roll, and if they can, you know, I'm sure you were going to bring this up soon, but if they can take advantage of the Mahimi absence early on and try and get, you know, when Jason Smith's in the game or whomever else, try to work them in a pick and roll, because that's not going to be his strength. You know, that 1-4 pick and roll could be really key, really, really key in how they attack. And if they can do that, then maybe they can sneak a game out in those first two in Washington. And if they can do that, then you're looking at a series that the Hawks can win. I do think they have to get one of those first two, though.
That was going to be a question too. For, and I definitely agree. I think if the Hawks go down 2-0, it's lights out. And that seems pretty simple also, but I think it's almost more important now for the way this team has been playing recently. If you want to argue in favor of the Hawks, it's because of their upward trajectory late in the year. Mm-hmm. And if they go out and lose the first two games, with what we said earlier about the home court advantage kind of not being a thing this year, the Hawks have been, I believe they finished 23-18 at home, which is not inspiring, to be honest, for a playoff team to be only five games over 500 is not great at Phillips Arena. I think the crowd will be into it for sure because it's the playoffs, but I'm not sure how much that matters necessarily. But yeah, you do mention Jason Smith. I mentioned him earlier in the week, but it's worth noting Yal Mahimi's probably going to, I don't want to say miss the whole series, but he'll be reevaluated in 7 to 10 days. We kind of know what that means. That usually means you're not going to be back in 7 to 10 days. It'll be a little bit longer than that. And Jason Smith's not a very good basketball player, but he's had some moments against the Hawks and can stretch Dwight Howard out a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
With his jump shooting, at least if he's making jump shots, he's shot the ball well against the Hawks at various times in his career as well. So something to keep an eye on there. Actually, you know, friend of the program, Brett Legree, who's been on a couple times, I know you and I both know well, advocated a little bit for the Hawks to go small and kind of, I'll just eliminate Dwight Howard altogether, but not play Dwight Howard very much in the series. I believe Brett's threshold was 75 minutes in the entire series, which seems a little bit aggressive, but
that's light.
Brett did say that he was advocating for something extreme. That was the quote. So he understands that. But what do you think about the notion of playing small versus the notion of trying to use Dwight's strengths to take advantage of, maybe not of Gortat because he's a pretty good player, but if Smith's on the court, I mean, it's kind of that strength versus weaknesses thing. So how do you think the Hawks should approach the series in terms of Dwight, especially because the offense is usually a question with him on the court?
Well, the problem that you run into with Dwight isn't so much that you worry about Jason Smith shooting. I mean, like, if he knocks down shots, then whatever, he's knocking down shots. But you all of a sudden, if he's out there around the three-point line, then Dwight's not in the paint for when John Wall drives. And that's what you're concerned with. And maybe if you go smaller, you can do some more creative things to get somebody around the rim still and to keep the paint a little tighter and keep somebody there, because that you're going to have that. John Wall is just a monster at getting to the rim. You know, whoever's on him, whether you are throwing Kent or Thabo or Dennis at him, he's going to get to the rim, and you need some deterrent down there. So, like, I understand where Brett's coming from, and offensively, you know, if you don't want to all of a sudden have this temptation to feed Dwight in the post against Jason Smith. I mean, you know this as well as anybody. Dwight post-ups aren't the way to go. And so I think that's the biggest fear, is that's what the temptation is going to be. But like I said, I think what you want to do, if you're doing anything, and if they can convince Dwight to do it, and this has long been a thing with Dwight, is if you can convince Dwight that the best way to attack Jason Smith is to get him moving and to get him in space and make him defend pick and rolls, and Dwight's committed to doing that, which is not usually the case, then there's a place to attack him with Dwight on the floor. If Dwight wants to get down on the block and try and work, you know, ISO post-ups, then yeah, no, you can't have him out there.
That's not going to work.
Like, that's just not going to work. Like, you're not going to win. I can't remember ever seeing a series won, even when Dwight was, like, good and leading the Magic to the finals. Like, it was because they had shooters around, and they were running pick and roll and diving him to the rim, and SVG was doing all those things. They weren't, like, throwing it into the post 15 times to Dwight.
And he was, and by the way, he was a better post player then than he is now, which is kind of funny to think about. Because you think of guys maybe getting more polished as they get older. And I'm not sure Dwight hasn't. It's just that he's not quite as explosive as he used to be. So it's that thing where...
That's the biggest thing. He could just kind of get to his spot much easier. I don't know if you need to completely take Dwight out of the series. I think there are things that he provides, especially when Gortat's on the floor. Just, you know, Gortat can eat you on the offensive glass. Like, he's a monster down there, and if you're not careful, you know, if the Hawks don't have somebody that can rebound with him, that could be a problem. But I agree, when Smith is playing significant minutes, I don't think you want to match up him and Dwight too often. So I think the biggest thing isn't, can we, you know, see Dwight get taken out of the series to a sub 100-minute, 75-minute degree, but will we see Bud do a little more lineup matching and going small when the opportunity presents itself, which essentially is when Gortat's out?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how the Hawks attack for a number of reasons, including the ones we've already said. But, you know, Gortat's probably going to play a lot in this series. When Mahimi was out earlier in the year, I looked it up just now as we were talking. Gortat was playing somewhere in the neighborhood of 36 minutes a game. That might go up even in the playoffs, especially if Smith's not playing well. You might see some 40 minute games from Gortat in the playoff series. So I think he's going to play more minutes than Dwight, and you're going to have to survive at least a little bit in the series with Gortat on the floor without Dwight, whether that's Muscala or just going full on small with, you know, Millsap at center. The Hawks have had some success playing that way. this season. So we'll keep an eye on that. It's just the lineup stuff is really interesting because Washington, their primary lineup, their best five plays a lot, like almost more than, you know, maybe not every lineup in the league, but a top like 10 lineup in the league in terms of minutes per game this season has been their starting lineup, essentially, with Markieff Morris and Gortat joining Porter, Beal, and Wall. So defending that lineup, I think, is going to be, I mean, obviously, the defense is not the biggest concern, but I think it actually is a concern in just the way that you approach them, especially in crunch time. So you can't just ignore that either. And I know we're not doing that, and Brett wasn't doing that either. You have to be able to guard them too. And if that becomes a thing where you can't have Dennis on Wall, for instance, and you have to maybe not take him off the court, but you have to try to hide him somewhere else, it's going to be interesting to see what they do, because your best defenders on this team do not really match up with the guys you have to take away for Washington.
Yep.
When Washington's best players are their two guards, and I think you could pretty much put Thomas Efolosha if you had to on one of those guys, or even Bazemore's not an elite defender, but he's a guy who can at least...
He's an effort defender.
He can chase. Yeah, it's not. I think he's going to get burned if you put him on either guy for a long stretch. But I think your best defensive option is Thabo. But with the way that he's not played a ton down the stretch and he's not 100% healthy, it kind of throws a monkey wrench in. And then you have Prince as well, as sort of your X factor. But Prince is more of a big, strong defender versus a guy who's going to be chasing around guard. So it's not ideal on either side of the court. We should just say that right off the top. I think scoring is still the biggest issue, but even defensively, there's some concerns. And rotation stuff, too. I was going to ask you about this, so I'll just do it now. How deep do you think Bud goes rotation-wise? Because we've often complained about Bud not shortening his rotation necessarily as much as a lot of other coaches do. And with this news now that Prince is going to be probably starting, it looks like, and I think even if he doesn't start, the fact that he's even thinking about that means he's probably going to be playing. Is Bud going to go with a 10-man rotation in the playoffs again? Or is he going to just maybe scrap the point guard position behind Schroeder altogether? He's done that a few times this year. What are you thinking about rotation in the series?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't surprise me if he goes real tight on the point guard just because of the matchup with Wall. I don't know if he's going to want to trust Delaney out there. I don't know how much he...
You can't play Calderon. I'll say
you
that.
You can't play Calderon.
I've been saying that. I've been saying that for a week now.
He would get cooked. I mean, like, the thing is, Jose Calderon he is a shooter. And against certain teams, you can play him. Against John Wall, you can't. He would literally be a traffic cone.
I just think even when Wall's not on the court, like, maybe you think about putting him in and kind of stealing some minutes against Brandon Jennings. But Brandon Jennings is going to cook Calderon. It's not a situation where you can really hide him.
No. And the interesting thing is do you try and hide Dennis on Otto some? Because Otto's pretty much – he's been very much a shooter this year. He was leading the league in three-point percentage at one point, wasn't he? Something like that. I mean,
he was, yes.
He's tapered off significantly, and so I think you're less worried about him shooting right now because he's kind of fallen off that cliff a little bit. Do you sometimes just kind of go, all right, we'll take our chances with if they really want to try and iso Otto Porter on Dennis, we've got the ball out of John Wall and Bradley Beal's hands. Sometimes I think you do things to entice teams to go away from what they do. And I'll be interested to see about that. As far as rotation, I think we're going to see about what we always see. I think, like you said, you know, point guard's going to be the spot where he goes short. We're going to see we're going to see Muscala. He might throw Humphreys out there.
The question for me is, I guess I assume we're going to see Muscala most of the time as the fourth big. That's not a big concern. It wouldn't blow me away if Bud went with three bigs for an entire game. He did a few times and kind of took Muscala out. If we see Humphreys, I'm going to be livid as usual.
It wouldn't surprise me. But
no,
yeah,
it wouldn't
surprise
me either. To be honest, he trusts Humphreys.
That's the thing is I think he's going to go with that. So by shortening the rotation, you might see nine guys.
I guess the question for me is, do we see Mike Dunleavy in this series? Because with Efolosha back, you absolutely know you're going to see Bazemore, Efolosha, and Hardaway, and we think Prince. There's not really room to play five wings in a playoff series necessarily. So I think if you saw Dunleavy, it would be have to be at the expense of someone else. And he's definitely number five of five for me. But at the same time, he is your best shooter. So I can see why you might want to trot him out there. But I think at the same time, he's the worst player of the five. But it's kind of known to be suffocated by the veteran presence guy. And that might be Dunleavy.
Oh, yeah. It's extremely Spursy, except he doesn't have Spurs veterans. Like, that's the thing. Like, it's you know, Spurs will trot anybody out there, but they tend to get a little more out of them.
Yeah.
And they tend to have better guys, so.
And defensively, he's tough to hide, too.
I don't know. I mean, again, you know, do you just cross your fingers and say, man, I really hope Kelly Oubre doesn't cook him?
Well, like with the second, Oubre's the guy you can hide people on because his offensive game is not not the best, we should say. I actually kind of like Kelly Oubre, former Hawks legend Kelly Oubre. I'm kidding about that. People still get angry about that trade as if the Hawks were going to trade for Kelly Oubre. We're drafting Kelly Oubre. But no, that's the guy you can hide. So, for instance, if you get into a situation where you feel like you have to play Calderon or Dunleavy, they almost have to guard Kelly Oubre because – I think Washington's going to shorten the rotation, so it's going to be one of those things where we're not going to see a lot of Thomas Satoransky. I don't think he's their fourth guard. I'm not sure we're going to see a lot of him in the series. Trey Burke's not going to make too many appearances, I wouldn't imagine. Shout out to Trey Burke. So we'll see what happens there. By the way, back to Porter real quick. Before the All-Star break, 46.6% from three. Post All-Star break, 34% from three. So that went to your point.
A stark drop-off. Shout out to, I think I got that one from Chris Herring, the great Chris Herring.
Chris Herring, on the Eat Me podcast. Shout out to the Eat Me podcast, which we can plug later. But that's where you have to hide. If you want to hide somebody, it's going to have to be Porter and their best five. But still, you know, Porter's long enough where he can shoot over Dennis pretty much on command. So,
yes.
And Dennis is known to get lost off the ball, much in a way that Jeff Teague used to get lost off the ball. Dennis, frankly, this year has been a bad defender across the board, but I think you can at least see his upside defensively when he's locked in on the ball. I just think off of it, you get into a little bit of a roller coaster. So a lot of decisions Butt has to make here in terms of matchup stuff, and it's a playoff series. He should have to make those decisions. And in the past, I've always been a Butt defender as a coach, but I've not always loved the way he's attacked playoff series. So we'll see if that happens again here, but. In this spot, he's not the favorite, so maybe that comes with a little bit less pressure. Maybe that comes with a little bit more incentive to get a little bit weird, which I almost would encourage in this series because, you're not the better team. You might have to make a couple of crazy decisions and try some stuff and just see what sticks.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think – yeah, this is the first time Bud's come into a series where he's not – a first-round series where he's not a top-four team, correct?
Since the first year without Al Horford when they were the 8 seed against Indiana, but that was sort of a weird series in general because Al Horford was gone and they knew they had to throw the kitchen sink at Indiana. By the way, they almost won that series, which is hilarious. One thing goes the other way and they probably won that series, which is still wild to me.
Amazing. So I mean, like I'd like to see that. I would like to see Bud get a little creative with it. If you're going to play a lot of guys, get creative with the rotations. Try something new. Try maybe, you know, like don't just like throw random lineups out there. But like if you think you can find an advantage against this Wizards team and you think you can maybe create some extra space and you're looking at how they've played defense over the last month and a half of the season, 2 months of the season, you see a little something, like try to attack it. Like I'd like to see that. I'd like to see them, maybe go after, Bradley Beal a little more, I think that's the weak link on the perimeter defense compared to Otto and Wall. I think you go at Beal. So maybe you're running a little more with Tim Hardaway has the ball in his hands, which I know scares the hell out of you.
No, not really. Actually, I think offensively he's kind of, you know, especially lately, has been pretty good in the pick and roll. And
I think maybe you run a little, you get a little funky. You run some 2-4 pick and roll, get Hardaway and Millsap, your two really your two best offensive players right now.
That's a wild statement, but it might be true, which is crazy.
As far as who can score the basketball? Like, yeah. I mean, not from a total, but like you get your two best scorers involved in a play, and then all of a sudden kind of you get, you know, like Tim's pretty good going to the hoop. And obviously Paul can pop and he can roll to the rim and is by far your best offensive player. I mean, like I think you get a little weird and you try to really kind of force the hand and have your best offensive weapons have the ball more often. I mean, like I know you want to run the, you know, he likes his motion, he likes his pace and space, and he likes all that, which we haven't seen. Like, that's my favorite thing. It's like, we, you know, like he's talked so many times over the years about pace and space and all these things, and we just never see it this year.
They played a little bit. I mean, not even a little bit. They played a lot faster when Howard leaves the court, so I'll give him that. I just think you can't really play pace and space with Dwight Howard at his current age, because he's just not going to run with you. That's not going to happen. But the Hawks did finish, I think, like 11th in pace, and a lot of that was with Dwight off the court. But it's not like they play Nate McMillan slow. It's just that the pace and space thing has become funny, I will agree, in that Atlanta doesn't really run in the way that you would like to think when you say that.
Well, it's not even just running. It's not even just running. Like, I don't have an issue. Like, it's not. It's just a space thing. It's like, are we shooting threes?
Well, you don't have any shooters. That's the thing.
Well, I know, since July. I don't know. You gotta create something. You gotta find that space. Like, I don't know. Like, I understand. I don't know. Which maybe you do throw Dunleavy out there every once in a while to just, for like a 4-minute stretch, like close a freaking second quarter with Dunleavy out there for the last 2 minutes and try to get something. Like, I don't know. Just get creative.
In the end, it's a roster construction issue that we've been talking about all season long, is that they just don't have the shooting. If you have,
which is amazing considering who's constructing the roster.
Yeah, I mean, I just think if you know you're going to have Dennis Schroeder and Dwight Howard as your point guard and center and Paul Millsap as your power forward, like you better have all the shooters on the wing, and they don't have any.
No.
Tim Hardaway Jr. has had a very good year, a better year than I ever thought he'd have. He's still not this knockdown shooter, and he's probably your best shooter. I mean, aside from Dunleavy, who is just basically a pure shooter at this point, Tim's three-point shooting has always been overrated, but he's been a little bit better this year. But aside from that, you have Kent Bazemore, Tabo Sefolosha, and Torian Prince. That's the rest of your wings, and those guys can't shoot.
Well, I think I think there's a little bit of hubris going on where they turned so many guys into these quality shooters and then forgot that Quinn Snyder left.
Yeah, that might be something. I mean, and Kent shooting back to earth was projectable, as we both said on this podcast. I think you even stronger than I did. But in the same breath, like, you couldn't expect Kent to be an awesome shooter. And honestly, he's leveled out to the point where he's shooting 35% from three, which is kind of what you thought he was going to do.
That's all you can ask from him. If you're thinking Kent Bazemore is going to ever be a consistent, like, high 30s shooter, like, I don't know what you've been watching. He doesn't have just the, like, he's a streak shooter. This is what he is. Like, you know what he is. A streak shooter shoot 35%.
And it's not like, all Kent either, but it's like he's the obvious guy because he got paid. But even for as much as I love Tabo, Tabo's not a shooter, and he never has been. You need his defense, but like that's another guy who can't shoot. And Torian, who I think can be a shooter down the line, is not one now.
No, and so like I you know, they had a shooter, and he's now in Cleveland.
Well, and I was fine with that move, but it doesn't help you in the playoffs.
This is the problem. That move signaled one thing, and then they didn't follow through.
Yeah, I mean, for as much as Kyle didn't have the greatest year in Atlanta, hilariously, he finished the year leading the NBA three-point shooting.
Well, we should get out of the way. Like, there's no way he goes anywhere near that if he's still with the Hawks and not getting the looks he was having with the Cavs. Like, I know you know that, but like, we just need to state that for people that look at what Kyle did at the end of the year and go, well, what if he was here? Well, what if he was here is he wouldn't be getting any space. But he still would provide that space for others because people have to close out on him. Where, like, the rest of the guys on the team right now, you're not – you don't worry about closing out on Kent right now. You're not charging hard out there to run him off the line. I came on the pod right after that, and we both said, okay, this is a fine move. Like, I'm fine with it, provided that this was the start of the teardown.
And I think it was, and then they pulled the plug. That's sort of the reporting that's out there, and that makes sense. I mean, in a vacuum, you got value for Kyle Korver. You got a first round pick for an expiring Kyle Korver. So I'm not upset about that move. And with the emergence of the way that Prince has played, it doesn't look quite as bad as it did then for this year. But I think we can probably agree that this team is better with Kyle Korver on it. So it's not like,
yes.
So from a pure playoff standpoint, going into this series, you would rather have Kyle Korver than not. But in the end, like, it was still the right move. It just doesn't help you now, which is always the weird part about it. Because the whole thing is they went out and bought at the deadline after doing that. They went out and traded for Ursula Yosova. They went and signed Jose Calderon, albeit for nothing. But still, they give up assets to add for this year after trading Korver for future assets. So it was it was always a divergent month or so that happened there, and that was not surprising, because just kind of the turmoil stuff that you've heard about in public and behind the scenes, just kind of making that decision on what they wanted to do and the Millsap stuff and pulling them off the market, et cetera, et cetera. But I think this team is better with Ursula Yamasova on it than it would have been as currently constructed with nothing else happening earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. That might be a hot take. I'd rather have Ilyasova and not Korver, which is a weird thing to say, only because your backup power four spot was a disaster.
That's true.
And I think Korver is probably still the better player than Ilyasova, but he filled a need. And because you had Prince in the tank to use, and we didn't know that at the time, but Prince has been better than I thought he'd be as a rookie, especially in the second half. So that ended up, quote unquote, working for you, if only because Ilyasova was just a Band-Aid over a situation that desperately needed one. But yeah. I don't know. It's tough. And in the end, though, I think we probably can agree Kyle Korver would be nice to have right about now, but it still might be the right move long term.
The problem is, it still might be the right move long term if they had built the assets, because the Cleveland pick on its own, I don't think is significantly worthwhile. You know my feelings on late first round.
Well, maybe there's a world where LeBron wins the 2019 title and retires. Sorry, no, the 2018 title and retires and rides off into the sunset, and then the next year they tank and have a bad season, and the Hawks get the 15th pick in the draft. I'm kidding, mostly. But, that's probably going to be like the 25th pick, and that's not great. But it's still, by the way, still better than having 3 months of Kyle Korver on a team that's going to win 43 games.
That's true. But, like, I don't know. Like, I just... If this is what you were going for, it's more just what it signaled to what didn't happen. That's the frustration.
For sure. We could probably just agree on that and get off of it. But
yeah,
it was frustrating. All right, man, before I let you get out of here, we need to do some predictions. It's time. I'm not giving mine out. I did a podcast last night as we record this that broke down all the series, and I neglected to give out my official pick, although I did say Washington was going to win the series. But I'll go last. I'll let you go first. Pick and how many games? Fire.
Zards in six.
Yeah, that was going to be my pick as well. So as usual, we agree on this.
Classic.
I think this is funny. I mean, this is my tentative prediction I put out on Twitter. I do think it's a little bit odd always to pick a team with home court advantage in six games. But with the way the Hawks have not played well at home this year, and with sort of how hot and cold they've been, it would not surprise me if they went out and won a game in Washington in the first two, came home, lost a game, and split again, and went back to Washington 2-2, and just had the Wizards win the next two to close the series. That'd be my prediction in the series, actually. Two splits, and then Washington wins the last two games.
Yep.
Just because home court is not a thing for the Hawks this year. So we'll see if that happens. I guess... Before we get out of here, one thing, give me the scenario that Hawks fans should be excited about. If we see something in the first game or two that's working, what's a signal that the Hawks could actually win this series if something happens specifically?
People are knocking down shots.
Yeah, it's probably that easy.
It's I think there's two things. It's Dennis is hanging with John Wall. You know? He's playing well. He's not getting out of his game. He's not trying to take John Wall ISO all the time, but he's playing well. He's getting to the rim. And just that matchup isn't going south. And Kent and Fabo and Tim and Ersan are hitting their open looks. I mean, the Hawks are just not been a great open three-point shooting team. They get some looks. It's pretty much that simple for me. You know, if they're making those shots and it's the Dennis Wall matchup, and it's if they're knocking down shots, I think Washington will present you with opportunities on that end of the floor, and the Hawks are taking advantage of those, then that's your optimistic view. And so if through two games they split and they're hitting some shots, then you start feeling confident because they do have some streak shooters, and they, like you said, they can get hot for a 2-week stretch. And well, in the playoffs, if you get hot for the right 2 weeks, you get to the next round. So that's your optimistic view, is the Hawks start knocking down some shots. Washington continues to play poor defense and is giving them these looks. And you know, Dennis is playing well against John Wall and not neutralizing that matchup, but not losing it significantly. And elsewhere, you're just getting what you want from Paul Millsap.
And don't forget, 75 minutes or less for Dwight Howard. No, I'm just kidding. thanks for joining me, sir. Please plug anything you would like. We are colleagues on another website, so we can plug anything you want there, as well as the podcast. Get it all out there for the people.
Yeah, you can read myself and Brad over at Uproxx Sports, Dime Magazine, all that good stuff. I might be doing something. It's not official yet, so I actually can't plug it, but I might be doing some series coverage of this, of the home games for a certain outlet. So keep an eye peeled for that. I might be doing some features and game stuff for them with a Hawks-centric take. And then you can listen to the It Me podcast. Just search that, iTunes, anywhere you listen to podcasts. Myself, Martin Rickman, we had Chris Herring on this past week, breaking down NBA playoffs. And next week, we have the wonderful Cassidy Hubberth coming on. So,
all right. I didn't know that. Really, that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
Little scoops for the listeners. So if y'all are into that sort of thing, Cassidy's great. And we're really looking forward to having her on. So, that'll be out late next week, but the Herring episode's up, and we'll be cranking out NBA playoff coverage throughout. So, if you're into more podcasts, but obviously listen to this one first.
And by the way, also follow Uproxx for all your Fast 8 coverage, because Robbie's all in on Fast 8.
That's right. I interviewed Michelle Rodriguez. It's up there.
Yeah, I know you have lots of takes, and obviously no spoilers here, but you were very excited about that film, as
go
I know
see it.
Speaking to you.
Go see it. I'm actually going again. Today's Friday, so I'm going tonight.
Of course you
going
are.
Going back. IMAX this time.
You're going to see it. Okay, before we get out of here, over under 4.5 times in the theater.
Whew. I'm going to say under 4.5 in the theater. It really just depends on the thing. Like, it'll be tight.
The fact that it's close says it all, I think.
Well, the thing is, people want to, you know, I get some people are like, oh, let's go see it. And I don't turn down that. I think after this, I'm probably done with making my own plans to go.
When I call and put the back signal out, we'll go together, because I just haven't. I don't ever go to the movies anymore because I watch basketball. But yeah, it's time. It's happening.
Yeah, if there's one of these off nights for Hawks Zards, we'll go. I'll go when people want to go. Like, I'll go. It's so good. Like, I went and saw the screener on Wednesday. I'm going again tonight. I'll go anytime. It's just like, I'm just not gonna like drop the money on my own volition anymore. But yeah, I'm always down for some furiousness in the theaters.
I'm excited. It should be a lot of fun. Anyway, follow Robbie on Twitter as well, at R. Catland, and all those things. I can't imagine you don't follow him already. But if you don't, do that. Thank you, sir, for joining me.
Yes, sir.
We'll be back Monday, actually, to wrap up Game 1. It'll be the next time we see each other on the podcast. And until then, stay tuned.